Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Hey y'all, life's journey is filled with change, growth, and exciting new chapters. Whether you're welcoming a new family member, stepping into a new city, or chasing after your biggest dreams, you need a ride that's built with more space for the grand challenges ahead. The Toyota Grand Highlander is made for those who embrace every twist and turn. With advanced safety features, innovative tech, and a bold, sophisticated design, it's the SUV that adapts with you with room to spare. This spacious beauty seats up to 8, gives you up to 97.5 cubic feet of cargo space, and has a diverse engine lineup, available in gas or hybrid options, including the powerful 362-horsepower Hybrid Max. Plus, available all-wheel drive means you'll have confidence no matter where life takes you. Ready to take on your dreams? The Grand Highlander is more than a vehicle. It's your partner in embracing all life throws at you. From daily routines to unexpected adventures, it's up for every grand challenge. Learn more at toyota.com/Grand Highlander. Toyota, let's go places.
You should not read more than 2 self-help books in a row. Most people don't know how to talk about books. I don't think the farm boy trope is overused at all.
Disagree.
I love it. Disagree. Give me more. I don't have enough farm boys. Welcome, welcome everyone to the Toot Around Podcast. My name is Richard.
My name is Austin.
Today is a part two. We're doing my hot takes. So we're going to be discussing my top 10 biggest hot takes in the book space.
I'm curious to see how correct you are. How are your takes also hot? I'm imagining they're hot.
See, that's a difficult thing to figure out is... Are your takes hot, or are you just so correct all the time and everyone's wrong? Like,
I'll let you know.
You'll let me know.
So I'll be agreeing or disagreeing with each of these takes. Mm-hmm. And if I agree, I'll try to give some counterpoints to if the audience disagrees with you.
Your role is to be the audience surrogate. And yes. So you can say your opinion, but ultimately try to give voice to the voiceless down below in the comments.
I will. And let us know, just like you did, if you watched the 10 hot takes from, this one's titled Richard's 10 hot takes or whatever, but on the last video, just like the last video, let us know how many of Richard's takes you agree or disagree with. What's the number? Is it 10 out of 10? 1 out of 10? We'll see. How much are they disagree
or agree with you? How based are you? Nah, used based very unironically there.
We were just talking about slang in the last episode, too.
I know.
So...
All right.
Get us ready. Get us started.
Number one, I've been seeing it across the BookTube space, mm-hmm. and I think people will be very surprised with my opinion on it. But my hot take is that TikTok has not ruined reading.
I'm very surprised. I'm very surprised by your take. I do agree. Yes, I do agree.
I see TikTok as a symptom, not a cause. Like, it's not the cause. The people that I completely understand. I've seen the videos of, you know, these people saying like, yeah, I only read the dialogue. I just skip the descriptive paragraphs or I get it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're reading wrong. They're doing things wrong. However, I don't think it's TikTok's fault in particular. Like, that person maybe wouldn't have read if not for TikTok. They just wouldn't have read at all. They were already not reading, and now they're reading wrong. Like, I don't know. I don't see that as, like, TikTok's fault. You know? That's just people doing people who weren't going to read in the first place read in a very abnormal or toxic way. But it's not TikTok's fault.
I agree with you. It's not as though if TikTok wasn't there, people would magically start reading in this way.
Yeah.
Right? It's just they were non-readers, and now they're reading this particular way. Or maybe they were already readers. Do you think there's any credibility to TikTok has done something to attention spans and made people worse readers in that way?
Honestly, if you're TikTok-brained, I'm surprised you're reading at all.
That's the Richard I know. There we go. Bring him out.
That's
bring
a win. Bring him out. No, if you're doom scrolling on TikTok and you somehow, like, you break out of your cage and you actually get to a book, that's a win. Just take another step and read maybe every page of the book and we're off to the races.
Now, would you extend your take on TikTok and say the same for social media in general? Do you think social media is the symptom or the cause?
That's an interesting question. To that, I would expand it.
Yeah.
The main thing is I've seen on YouTube plenty of videos saying like TikTok has ruined reading. Mm-hmm. And meaning that the way that people are reading and describing how they read on TikTok is wrong, which I agree with. But I don't think that's the cause. And I think it's the same thing with social media. Does social media stop? If the question was different, does social media in some way impede or discourage the act of reading? Yes. But has social media caused people to read in a certain way? And like, no. If anything, it just provides an alternative to reading that is more inducive to serotonin levels. So like that's all it is.
Gotcha. Because you're taking this. What do people mean when they're saying TikTok is ruining reading? Because I've seen the headlines, I've seen titles, but what do they actually mean?
Basically that they're treating either they're talking about the people who basically are at a very low reading level and insisting adult books be, you know, lowered in a reading level. Clearly these people have not done well in school and they're insisting books be dumbed down.
That's what's happening, or
I'm extrapolating.
Oh. I think you're doing a bad job at defending.
I may be interpreting for some people.
You're taking some leaps.
I'm taking some leaps. I speak for myself.
Okay.
I'm mainly basing this off of some of the videos I've seen from these other YouTubers. Mm-hmm. And there's one that's more popular. There's this woman talking about how she's like, man, these books are too long. Correct. But her solution is, yeah, I just read the dialogue scenes. I just skip all of the description stuff. And then she was like, oh, yeah, and then I'll just skip to the end. Like, reads out of order, doesn't read the whole thing, and then still counts like she read the book. That's one aspect.
Don't do that, yes.
Yeah. Reading wrong.
Don't do that.
Is that TikTok's fault? No. This person just doesn't read very often and clearly needed a better teacher. Beyond that point, there's the other aspect of gamifying reading. Of a big part of TikTok is like showing their TBR list and like, oh yeah, I'm on book 704 for this year and like trying to reach certain reading goals. And so that is causing people to read in a like skim reading everything.
Got it.
So that's what generally people are saying. And then also elevating books with really pretty covers and not actually good stories.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think when the interesting thing about that claim of TikTok is ruining reading, if you're to make that claim, I think you have to pull back and say social media.
Sure.
Right? Because TikTok is a form of social media that is addicting for sure. But there's YouTube Shorts, Instagram Stories. TikTok does not have the sole capacity of addicting content online that would also influence people to read differently, I guess. But book talk is huge. So I guess that's why it's talked about, because that chamber of TikTok is massive. Mm-hmm. Whereas BookTube, it's a part, but it's not even close to a large part of what YouTube is. So
the best argument I can see from it is if TikTok and people participate in reading however they're reading, reading the wrong way, was just them, fine. I think where people start to be like, oh, this is actually hurting the industry, is you see there's a lot of money behind it, that these people that are reading like these really garbage books but making a butt ton of money because of TikTok and the way it markets things, now the industry is going to put more money to that and not actually good stories. And so that would be the good counter argument to what I'm saying, is that
I see what you mean,
because TikTok is influencing and encouraging people to read in this really toxic way, and that a lot of people are doing it and there's a lot of money, that it is changing the industry in a negative way to how
appeal to that other subset of readers.
Yeah.
Gotcha. I get you. I tend to disagree too. I agree with the broader term of social media has affected things more. I just wouldn't target it at TikTok, I guess. So if there's any claim made, or more so, because obviously, maybe less obviously, but social media has caused a lot of issues.
Yeah.
And it, I don't, yeah, go ahead.
I was just looking at it proportionally.
Yeah.
Manga has affected my reading hobby more than TikTok.
Yeah. But you also don't use TikTok at all, right?
But no, because I'm thinking like, what people do on TikTok, who cares? That doesn't affect me. What affects me is what can I find in the store? What's at Barnes & Noble?
Manga, yeah.
Barnes & Noble has normally a table, a shelf that says, hey, popular on TikTok. Okay, it's a table, it's a shelf. I consistently see manga eating up more and more of the percentage of Barnes & Noble. I remember when, you know, fantasy sci-fi section was double the size it is now. It is significantly shrunk because manga is more popular and invading on that kind of marketplace. And it is, you know, more popular. That's what it is. That affects me more than TikTok.
Also, there's the good side of recommendations for BookTube, BookTok, all that stuff hey, you could go to the table there where it says BookTok recommendations. Go, I kind of like a couple of these.
Or true.
What have you. Because it depends. I know we post on our social media all the time, and a lot of our videos that do well on the shorts platforms are us pitching a book. That's it. It's going, hey, book recommendation. And that's it.
I think the number one, from when we went to Dragonsteel, I believe the number one video that people said, like, hey, I got introduced to your stuff from our Red Rising TikTok.
Yeah.
That we're you were mainly pitching Red Rising. I mean, that's cool. Like, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Hey, go read fun book. Go read good book. I mean,
that's positive.
Yeah. It's just how you use the tool.
You know what's not a hot take, Rich?
Displate.com.
It is Displate's birthday, and they are sponsoring this episode. It's their 12th birthday of having the magnetic poster company that you see us advertise all the time. We have them. We have lots of them even behind the camera. But they even have these newer additions that are Textra Displates, where you can... there's indentations and it looks like a mosaic that you could see, or stained glass window that you could see at a church or anywhere. So this says, this is just their Textra editions. And for their 12th birthday, Displate is offering a discount of up to 44% if you get four more Displates, but they also offer a 33% discount if you're getting one to two Displates, a 37% discount if you're getting three Displates using the code TUTORAMBLE at checkout. It's the magnetic swapping mounting company. Every single Displate comes with a magnetic kit, so when you put them on your wall, you don't have to use any nails, and you can give them, on their birthday, a gift for somebody else's birthday. If you're running late on a gift, it takes 5 days to get to you and ship to you. Rich, you want to show your cooler one?
You can even get bigger ones, and you can use the same magnet for smaller Displates, for your larger ones, kind of what I do. I swap them out occasionally at my office and in my bedroom, so great use. That's the best thing about being able to hot swap these things just on the fly, whatever you're feeling.
Yes, indeed. And hey, it's their birthday. Go give this to someone for their birthday. You can find anything from any books, any movies that you guys like. They have posters of that. Go check them out. Displate.com. Use code TUTORAMBLE at checkout. And we'll get back to your hot takes, Rich. Hot take. I'll agree with you. Still,
there you go.
I'll agree with you. That's one for one. You're one for one.
Yep. Number two. All right.
I need hotter, by the way. I need hotter.
I don't know if you'll find it this one. This will probably be a quick one. Maybe other people will disagree with me down below.
Okay.
9 out of 10 times, I dread the announcement of a book adaptation. I don't get excited. I get the opposite of excited.
I'm glad you said 9 out of 10. Because there's 1 out of 10 I do get excited. I will agree, Project Hail Mary, which was announced, and Ryan Gosling, I'm not going to lie, I'm very excited for that.
Yes.
Exception, though. That's the 1 out of 10.
It's the exception.
That's the 1 out of 10.
Actually, you know what? I also have another one.
Oh,
some exceptions are coming out of the woodwork today.
What's another one?
I'm already proving myself wrong.
Yeah.
The adaptation for Murderbot.
Oh, yeah.
Trailer looks pretty good.
I haven't even seen the trailer, but I'm excited.
Trailer's not bad.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, we'll see. I'm not paying for Apple TV. So, I'll watch it, though, in other yo-ho-ho ways.
Do you find, is this true? A little side tangent. Are adaptations of more modern, recent books easier to do for Hollywood?
I mean, probably. It would make sense, right?
A lot of the adaptation issues you have, they're taking books that are much older. Just they've been around for so long. You're going, man, that's a lot of weight to carry. Versus if they screw up Murderbot, it's like, damn, they missed the mark. There's a lot less. I don't know. Maybe that's just my view of.
Well, actually, carry that right into it.
Is this another hot take you have?
Do you want me to get into? Because do you think people would disagree with me? Is this a particularly hot take?
The person, so I agree with you generally because adaptations I've seen I've been very disappointed by. You could Witcher, Rings of Power, any Star Wars thing, which aren't really adaptations, but
yeah,
Wheel of Time for you. I think the person that would maybe disagree, the excitement behind your book getting adapted is maybe here's the argument that's being made of. You watch the adaptation and get disappointed, but maybe people are still excited when it's announced, going, oh, this could be good. I trust it. Because are you going to be not excited when if a Mistborn or if me for Red Rising? I can't lie. I'll be excited when Red Rising gets announced. I love the series, but I'll still be stoked.
I'll probably be on that dreading side of like, I like the books and unless proven otherwise, I doubt they'll do well.
You know, I'm starting to think
the more I like a book, the less I want it adapted.
I get you. Well, here's the thing. This is you now, but before season one of Wheel of Time, you were excited.
Oh, I was.
You were stoked for Wheel of Time.
They showed the casting, and I was like, yes, 100% yes. These characters look the role. They got Rosamund Pike.
Yeah.
She's great. Awesome. My one concern, I was going like, man, I know Rosamund Pike is like the big actress here.
Mm-hmm.
Totally get it. She's the big star. Why is all the marketing material making Moraine the main character? Little strange. Like, Moraine's great, but I know where the story goes.
Yeah.
She's not the main character.
Well, she was the biggest actress, right? She was most popular, yeah.
But
not story.
No, it's story. So that was a concern, and that ended up being valid. But that's the past.
Neither here nor there.
Yeah. This will come out in a time like season 3 is already wrapped up. I will get I know people in the comments down below. I've heard good things. I've heard very positive things. However, this seems to be the pattern, and I was just talking about this at dinner with you.
What happened?
Season 1, Wheel of Time.
Yes.
People are cautiously optimistic, excited. People saying, hey, Wheel of Time's good. Wheel of Time's good. Season finale. And it's going like, it's still pretty good. Couple months later, actually, it wasn't that good. Season 2 comes around. Hey, it's better than season 1. Excitement. Hey, it's good. Season 2's good again. They've improved it. Couple months after season 2 ends. Okay, actually, it wasn't that good. We have now just ended with season 3. People are saying, oh, it's the best one yet. It's improved so much more. Wheel of Time's back, baby. I'm giving it 3 months. I ain't even considering anyone's opinion online until 3 months have passed. Then maybe I'll watch it.
You'll maybe read it or maybe watch it after
that. I'm waiting 3 months. Yes. Then what are people's reactions to it? Then I'll decide if I watch it or not.
Yes. You did say that at dinner emphatically.
Yes.
But yeah, I agree, but I'll go half and half and say I will still be excited for certain adaptation releases, specifically for book series that I like but don't love to. I'll probably be a little excited for.
Yeah.
Because if it's something that, as much as I love Red Rising, I would like a couple of changes here and there. I would, or improvements through the, and I would love to see how it actually looks, especially if it's an animation. But Murderbot, what excites me about Murderbot, I like Murderbot lot.
I really like it, but I'm also not, it's not my favorite thing.
If it disappoints me, I'm like, I still really enjoy it, but.
Yeah. No, I completely get it.
For Wheel of Time for you, it's your thing. If they screw up your thing, oh no.
Yeah.
So that's the only counterpoint I'd say.
Now, as a follow-up to this one.
This is your third hot take.
This is my third hot take.
Let's hear it.
I'm now have to go out of order.
Okay.
So, my hot take here are people are not upset when Hollywood studios change the source material. But they are upset when they change it too little. There is no Goldilocks zone. There is either changed, like drastic changes of it is not the same thing, or you stick as closely to the source material as humanly possible. The Goldilocks zone is the death of why people are upset at adaptations. Now, there's an additional to this.
Keep expanding. Let me hear you out here. Okay.
Especially diehard fans get very upset when an adaptation is sold as a faithful adaptation of the story and it is a drastic change. And it's like when it is sold as faithful and it isn't, that's when people get upset. But if studios made the active decision of, hey, this is inspired by this story, but we are taking it in a very different direction, like from the gate, and made it different, not, oh, it's basically the same, but we made it like we changed a couple plot beats and just made the story worse. It's like, well, then why change it at all? What's the point?
Okay. I've heard you say iterations of this. So essentially, correct me if I'm wrong. You're saying studios should, to make a good adaptation, either change a ton and make it not the same thing or follow it completely, almost completely accurately.
Yes.
To a degree. Don't try to fit the Goldilocks zone of changing a lot, but also it being so close to the actual thing that it represents the thing, but they change fundamental parts about it that makes it not what it should be.
Yeah.
Okay. So you hate that Goldilocks zone.
Yes. That's and I think most people are upset at being sold a bill of goods that is false. And that if it is not like it kind of looks like the thing. It's trying to be your favorite thing, but they change fundamental aspects of it and yet pass it off as the same. That's why people are upset. I don't think people, like we've brought up several times before, people aren't upset at Magnificent Seven. People like Magnificent Seven. It's an adaptation of Seven Samurai, but it's drastically different. Completely new setting.
But also just to call it something different too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you wouldn't want it something called the Wheel of Times show and then be nothing like the Wheel of Time.
It can be very related to the Wheel of Time, but they make it very, very clear of this is a different story of the Wheel of Time.
Okay.
And if they made like drastic changes, like I'm giving, I guess what? Oh, I can't even say it. If the main character of the Wheel of Time was like from the beginning and they were told people like, we're actually telling a almost alternate story of the character that's we're making a different character the main character.
Mm-hmm.
And like explicitly. I think people would be more okay with that because it's like, okay, this is a different story they're trying to tell. Okay, cool. Give it to me.
Is there a Goldilocks zone with book one though for Eye of the World where you would want them to change some things?
Sure. But that's more just plot details of
still stay more to accurate.
Make things make sense.
But still focus on what Jordan was trying to do.
all the good stuff. Keep the good stuff. That's what I want. Keep the good, good. Get out the bad.
What's your take? Monkey what do you bones. Think the... I will ask you a couple adaptations. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not going to agree or disagree. I'll say agree with your main points, but questions on some of the adaptations, just so I understand you properly. Dune, what do you think the Dune movies did? Where was it?
The visually speaking?
No, not visual, just Dune the movies, storytelling.
Which, the new ones.
The new ones, yeah. Was it going Goldilocks, faithful, or change a bunch? If there's those three options.
The first movie, it was trying to be far more faithful.
First was going for faithful, okay.
First was going for faithful because the changes it made was largely reductive,
okay,
not addition. They just...
Okay, okay.
They took out a lot of things because they're making a movie.
The things I liked...
Yes, true.
Yeah.
But they're not trying to alter the story in a sense of like adding too many nonsensical plot lines in the first movie. The second movie does make a drastic change, but I think more subtly when you think about it. Because on the surface, everything is it looks like it's faithful. It ends in the same place. Most of the stuff kind of lines up. But there's a fundamental theme change where they took the message of the third book and pushed it to the, second movie.
So what would you consider that they changed a lot? Or was that be Goldilocks Zone then?
Probably, yeah.
But people did love that.
Yeah, because it looked
good. By people, I mean not me.
However,
yeah.
How many Super Dune fans have going... Yeah, the second movie didn't...
People unanimously love that film. Like, people love it. Except you Rocky and Rocky. That's
but
it.
Things, I just value Rocky's opinion.
Is that what changed your mind?
More than everyone else.
I see why you changed your mind.
I'm with you there.
Yeah.
I think most people like this. They like the Dune movies because of the visual spectacle of it.
I mean, that's the best part. It is
that's why it's an entertaining movie. And it's visually spectacular. That's why people love it.
What would you consider the Lord of the Rings? Was that Goldilocks same or a lot of changes? You know what I mean?
First movie is far more faithfully, closely adapted. Okay. Same thing with the third, I think.
Okay.
The second movie is probably a lot closer to the Goldilocks zone. It makes some significant changes, mostly the same. It kind of gets there, but it adds a lot of stuff that could be considered fluff or unnecessary.
I'll disagree with you then. I'll disagree. I think maybe movies do the Goldilocks better. Maybe that's the issue. Because shows have so much more time to mess up.
Yeah.
So, I'll caveat. I'll say shows agree, movies disagree.
Maybe so.
For Goldilocks Zone. But here's the thing, too, with Lord of the Rings. I know I love the movies. It's mm-hmm. That's our intro to all these podcast episodes. Would you say then for... What do you want out of an adaptation? Would you rather have perfect, faithful adaptation? Or would you rather have an adaptation that takes those liberties? But obviously, I guess what I'm asking you is, do you want as faithful as possible?
There is an intent behind it.
Yeah.
A lot of it can come down to, you can watch some of these interviews from different directors where they, you watch Peter Jackson, he clearly tried to make it about the source material.
Oh, yeah.
He tried his best to follow the books and follow the lore. He did his best, and his best was good enough. Everyone loves it. It's amazing.
Not just good enough.
Yeah. The bar was so high and he reached it. That's a miracle.
It is a miracle.
But there's a lot of directors will say we took this interesting story, really loved it, and we wanted to make it our own. And they clearly don't like aspects of the story. They just want to tell a different one. And so they fundamentally change it they've changed the fundamental part of a story while keeping all of the surface level visual stuff the same. It's like the fake meat burger. It looks like a burger, kind of smells like the burger, but when you take a bite, it's like, this ain't it. And I get disgusted. Mm-hmm. Versus I like a black bean burger. It's not trying to pretend it's meat. It's very different. So
you want changes have to be made for an adaptation to work, but don't take away the theme, don't take away the central element to the story.
I want to get the sense that they tried.
Yeah.
Like, oh, have you heart. Really did. You actually really did try to tell the story that was there, not fundamentally change it either for convenience sake or because they wanted to tell their own story.
Did they
story
have
instead.
A vision that was true to the author?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think you can tell by some of the changes.
You definitely can. I just think you have to change things, though. You have to get in that zone somewhere. But
yeah.
Yeah.
No, some changes are more important than others.
Mm-hmm.
You make changes for the sake of time. Mm-hmm. Makes sense. You make fundamental character changes that ultimately take the exact same amount of time or sometimes more. And it's different from the source material. It's like, why'd you do that? You didn't do it for time's sake. You didn't do it for plot. Why'd you change it? That's the question.
Now, of these three, last question on this, but of these three, I think we can both agree that subtracting things is the best you could do for an adaptation of you can't fit it in. To remove having something not there for time.
If you're trying to be very faithful to the adaptation. Yeah.
Versus adding or changing. Would you rather have added scenes to give more context or visual medium or them to change the scene from the books? If they have to, I don't know how much they change it, but whatever degree they do, what's better for an adaptation to add scenes or change a scene from the book?
I'll be honest. At this point, I want drastic change.
Okay. You want, okay. Got it.
I want them to do something completely new with it.
Okay.
I'd rather that.
Okay. Okay.
Because then it, whether it's good or not, then becomes irrelevant.
Got it.
Because if someone watches a poor, they do an adaptation of a book, some movie, and they make it drastically different.
Yeah.
It's inspired by the source material.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say it's good. People go like, hey, well, check out the source material. You may like that one. Or if it sucks, you go, hey, it's very different from the book. Check out the book anyway. And the book remains free from influence. Like it can stand on its own still.
Interesting.
I don't know. It's safer for me. Like I just hate the idea of my favorite thing being represented by something so awful.
Your take is I want the changes I want.
Always, yes.
just do what's in my head.
Either try your best to keep to the source material or really go to town.
I get it. Yeah, yeah.
It's one of those two things.
Try your best or like just flip patties everywhere.
Yeah, just okay. Wild changes.
Yep. But that would make it fun and interesting.
It would make it different and interesting. I would actually have fun with it.
Okay.
And I could separate it from the thing I love in my head.
Got it. You don't want to think of the bad thing when it's the thing you love.
It's that, again, it's the Goldilocks zone of like, man, this is so close to the thing I like, but worse. And it's like, well, then why am I watching it? What's the point?
What if it's so close to the thing, but better?
I haven't come across it yet, but
I have Lord of the Rings movies, baby.
You know, we'll go right into this one then. My bonus hot take was the Lord of the Rings books are much better than the movies.
We did discuss this in the last episode.
That was my bonus. You're wrong.
You're wrong. But we did. That was somebody's hot take they sent to us in one of the Patreon episodes. Which I check agree. That out.
I'm taking it. It's now my hot take.
Oh, okay.
I love it.
That's your fourth hot take?
No.
Okay.
That was my bonus one. I have it there.
Disagree. Hard disagree. But yes, that was, we're doing this whole video off of the patron submitted hot takes for us. Mm-hmm. We can't repeat theirs. So no cheating. Yeah. No cheating.
It just came up. Okay. All right. So here's another one.
This is number what? Four?
Five?
Four, I think.
Four?
I think four. If I'm miscounting.
One, two.
Did I get that right?
Three.
Oh, okay. No, you're right. All right, here we go.
This
here
is
we
number
go.
Four.
Spicy.
If you find yourself only enjoying a tiny niche of books, you are the problem, and you should try to rectify that problem.
Agree.
All right.
Yeah, agree.
Generally, I see... If you do find yourself only enjoying a tiny niche of books, that is generally indicative of how you search for books, of like putting a great deal of importance on only reading things that you like to an extreme degree. And where ultimately you then end up spending more time trying to find the thing you finding a book to read than actually just reading. And it's normally self-inflicted. I don't think someone would be like, yeah, I only like this subgenre. And you kind of meet those people, like they have their type. I feel like that's a self-inflicted, you know, artistic cultural wound.
Oh. Oh, dang. Hurt me with those words. Okay, so you're saying if they only like a tiny, so give an example of what this person looks like.
Should I be tactful?
No.
Or insulting?
Yes.
Okay. I have met people that like the only stuff that they will consume is like action manga. Like they only like, not even like a broad range of manga, but they only like a certain type, and then go even further, like light novels. Like the only things they're reading is like isekai slop.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a self-inflicted cultural wound. Like, come on, you gotta branch out. There's other good, like I promise you, there's other good stories out there. Like I promise you it exists.
That person out there who, if their palate, if they eat food, but they only eat pasta.
Yes.
You go, okay, you gotta, even rice, have another carb.
And like, try something a little different. It's something similar. Just, I would say even, like, my parents kind of, especially at their age now, going, you know, my mom likes the book she likes.
Mm-hmm.
She's less willing to try new things, and it's... She's just not willing to do this so much later in life. And yeah. maybe that is the caveat. At a certain point, how much do you value your time?
Especially if your mom has tried the other genres. It's more so if you think you only like pasta, at least give rice a try. Give broccoli. Just try the veggie. If you hate it, okay, try it maybe 5 years later.
It's maybe like you've
changed as a person, your taste buds.
It's like almost everything is... I'm also thinking the same person of they're significantly in their 20s, like, and they're only reading like YA novels still. Like they're reading the same kind of stuff for a long while. It's like, okay, look, you can be any age and read a YA novel. It's perfectly fine. They're great stories. But if that's the only thing you find yourself reading, you only do yourself a disservice. Like, branch out.
Thing is too, maybe you're you could get fatigued. If you're not fatiguing, you're just loving that series and you're just loving that type of story. Is there anything that every book you're reading just a banger, man, I love this one and this one. You just don't stop and you're loving each and every one. Would you say to just keep doing that, or even that's a problem?
I would say part of a reason to read is the joy of it, and entertainment and joy are certainly factors and reasons to read. I don't think it's the only reason. I don't think it's the only like significant reason.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is to experience different cultures, to become more sophisticated, learn something, see yourself in a different perspective. Like, it is to widen your expanse and experience in the only way humans really have figured out, because we only live our own, or this one life. So reading lets you kind of experience different lives. It's kind of the point.
Is the niche reader better than the non-reader? Or you think
honestly,
it's even worse?
I think it's worse. At a certain point, it's wasting time. Like how many times can, if you're so niche down in reading, you're reading the same story over and over and over and over and over and over again. At that point, like, you getting anything new? I don't know. Are you gaining a skill?
It can't just be entertainment. It's got to be more than entertainment.
I think it should be.
Should be.
Like, okay. It certainly can be.
Okay.
Evidence enough. But I don't think it should be.
Huh.
There's nothing wrong with entertainment. Yeah. But if that's all you're consuming is entertainment, eh.
What about the more sophisticated person than you or I? The person that is, like, they don't read very much, but they have a higher hobby. They do things, okay? They're a physicist, and they like physicist stuff, and they solve puzzles, and they know stuff that we don't know. But their entertainment, their hobby is they just want to read stuff. They know what they like, but they're not that. That's not what gets them going. I don't know. Just do you think you have to be that goes back to the video we had with the mittens? But do you have to read to be sophisticated? Do you think you have to?
You don't have to be, but if the question is, what will you become more sophisticated if you read?
No.
The answer is yes, if you actually read some degree of variety of books.
Okay.
If you try to expand your horizons ever so slightly. It's not even that you have to enjoy everything and read it, all different types of genres. It's just little by little and trying. Like when you're younger, your parents or your teacher should not hand you books that you can completely understand, that you 100% can read, and it's within your abilities to grasp. That's the wrong way to teach kids to read. You give them a book that is slightly beyond them, and you keep doing that. And for some reason, at some point, some people stop and then just keep reading books that are within their reach and don't try to grow anymore. And I find that a shame.
Mm. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying. We're viewing reading here as this the fundamental way to learn, to grow, challenge yourself.
I just see it as a waste that if you only treat books as entertainment and that's it.
Save big money and start your spring project with help from Menards. We offer a huge selection of Bonnie plants, veggies, and herbs to plant at home and grow yourself. Right now, all 4.5-inch Bonnie plants are on sale through May 18th. Head to the Menards Garden Center to get your garden growing and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. It has more to offer.
Sorry, another question. In the way, would you say the same thing to somebody who likes a video game? And like that's their entertainment, that's their reprieve, that's their escape. Like they just like the video game.
Depends on how much time they're spending on it. That is a fundamental difference.
Okay, so you're saying
books take a lot more time.
Well, gaming takes a lot of time.
I know.
Yeah.
That same kind of applies. Mm-hmm. A big reason I like reading is that it takes a lot of time out of your hands.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not just entertainment. I think if you are spending an absorbent amount of time only on entertainment, that also is a bad thing. If that's it. There's only so much time in a day. You can't just entertain yourself. Don't just consume said product and consume the slop. Grow, change, learn something.
All right. 9 to 5, working their ass off in the mines, comes home, just wants an hour of reading time at night for entertainment. Their tiny niche of YA hentai, whatever. Oh, isekai, whatever. And so
those are very different things.
I know. And so goes and reads that for an hour, goes to bed. Any problem with that person?
It's not wrong, but it's a shame.
Okay. You know, I think I disagree with you by the end. I agree with a lot of your points, but I think there's a reader out there that they don't take reading. They take it more as an escape. Enjoy. That's their wind down kind of time.
I agree with you in the sense of, I guess I have in my head the person who's like reading a lot.
Oh, you're saying this person like reads 12 hours. That's their thing, and they're only reading one thing.
Yeah.
I agree with you there.
Spending an exorbitant amount of time on reading and really only reading the same stuff. It's like, that's wasteful. I would have the same thing with video games. Video games are great, but if you're spending like 5-6 hours a day playing video games, like, that's maybe a bit excessive. It's the same thing with a bunch of stuff.
No, moderation's good.
Yeah. The best part about reading is like I spend a lot of time on it, but it is not just entertainment. It is entertainment plus.
Yeah. So, it's how you justify wasting all this time.
Yes.
Yeah, no, for you and I, obviously reading's the most important thing to me. And
it's my most important hobby.
Important hobby to me. Not there's people more important than reading to me, but yes. It's having that sense
I value things more important than reading.
Yes. As far as your free time goes, reading is that most important thing to you. So it's what do you spend doing that free time? Can you also gain something out of it? Yeah, I see what you're saying. Okay. You got like an 80% hit rate from me. I was like, okay, I agree with a lot of it.
All right.
Let's see this next one.
Fifth one?
Yes. Okay. The fifth one.
This is more of a funny one.
All right.
But I would say that this should be the ironclad rule. I'm taking a soft opinion very seriously.
Okay.
It should be a rule. You should not read more than 2 self-help books in a row.
You know what?
No.
Here's what I'll say.
You finish a self-help book and you go, the very next thing you do is pick up another self-help book. You did it wrong. You read the book. You used the book wrong.
I'll disagree. No, tell me why. So I see the only reason I disagree is I was looking up what they define as self-help books. It's broad.
Oh, okay.
It's so
how
if you
broad
look
is
up,
it?
The Anxious Generation that we read is a self-help book.
Oh.
Yeah. So that a lot of nonfiction. So self-help isn't defined as just like, hey, you read this to like go do action in the world and hey, pick yourself up and get your mental and buy a rental. I don't know, whatever the thing is. So it's not all just
eat, laugh, hey, pray, love.
It's not it's not just motivation porn in that way. Man, we say that word too much. But it is self-help I've seen is like that Anxious Generation is a book about social media and its causes on children and teens and how it causes anxiety and depression, et cetera, as for parents to read. But there's that style of book, which isn't very informative, that I think if the self-help you're talking about in your head is more so, hey,
yeah, like
go get them.
Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules for Life. That's like the vein of self-help. Like that's a self-help book.
That right is there. Very self-help.
That's, yeah, like definition. And that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Or how to make friends and influence others. Or, yeah.
The Ten Commandments.
The Ten Commandments. The best self-help book, some would say.
I go,
but you get what I mean? Of like,
no, I do. I get the one style you're talking about.
Okay.
But there's a broader definition of that I think you'd agree with, of going like, okay, if that's considered a self-help.
I'll agree with you on that. Like there's, if people are using the very, very broad definition of not academic, but still informative, which I think is,
I think
that's as loose as you can probably get it. Then yeah, then my rule doesn't apply. But in my head, if you understand what I mean by self-help book, then if you find yourself picking up a second one after finishing the first, you're doing it wrong.
If the self-help book worked, you should never pick up a book again.
Now, someone in the comments saying, but what if the first self-help book was awful? And to you, fair point. You're going, man, that was terrible. I'm going to try a different one because I ain't doing that one.
Man,
I'll understand.
Rich told me to go outside my niche and this fucking sucks. And so they did what you said and they read another niche, another genre, and they hated it.
That's what I'll get that. Okay. But I will say, still stick to the rule. It doesn't hurt to like, man, that self-help book was terrible. I'm going to like live a little bit more life and then read something else, then pick up a different self-help book. Maybe that one will be better.
Got it.
I've seen a couple people like in college, like you look at their desk and it's just a big old stack of self-help books. I'm like, Jesus, man, like you can read other things. There's other, like, all right.
You judge them.
I definitely judge them.
See what you mean.
Yeah.
There's those big self, the ones you named and others that you can go, what is it about the self-help books you don't like? Is it more so you wish people just acted on it? Then okay, follow the advice, do it.
Yeah. It's kind of like sad wish fulfillment. Like, there's wish fulfillment fantasy, but at least it's not kind of like pretending to be something it's not. It is wish fulfillment. It is fantastical in nature. It is like, oh, I'm putting myself in a fantastical world because I want to escape. That's one thing. It's another thing to have this wish fulfillment of bettering yourself without actually doing it. I apply the exact same logic to most business books that you read, like Rich Dad, Poor Dad, or what is it? First Millionaire in Babylon or something like that. There's a bunch of them. But if you're doing the same thing of just reading, you know, wantrepreneur books. Yeah. If you find yourself reading like more than two in a row, probably doing something wrong.
For the audience, Rich is talking about a very particular kind of book. I think I understand what you mean by it.
You understand. Yeah.
I get what you're saying. I disagree simply because there's a lot of types of self-help books.
And I
think the ones you've been exposed to are the ones that are, oh, it's telling me to do the same thing. I should just stop reading this particular self-help book and apply
then do
it.
The thing.
Yes. Yeah. But there's, it's like, okay, imagine this. If someone told you, you read a fantasy book. Mm-hmm. You read all the fantasy books. Look, you know, they're all fantastical. Yeah. Self-help, they all give you help, but not all is about how to make money and do the thing and the business thing. And
yeah, but for those particular type of books,
that type,
the effective way to actually gain something out of it, not just read and forget about it and go into the back of your knowledge of
what?
Stuff you kind of know but never actually practice, is you read the book. If you liked it, if you agreed with the message, you didn't think it sucked, try putting into practice. Act like as soon as you put it down, like you don't even have to wait till you're finished with the book. You read a great chapter, go, wow, that actually would improve my life. Do it. Do the thing. Improve your life. No, like that's all you need to do.
Hear me out. What if that person reads the book, goes, wow, I need to apply that. They apply it. They've been doing it. And for a month, it works so well. They're going, okay, I finished the book. They only got me here. Now I need to read part two.
Awesome.
They're reading it back to back, though.
You know what?
Two self-help books in a row.
You know what? Here's my point was like, you pick it right back up.
Say your claim. Let me hear that claim again.
You should not read more than two self-help books in a row. If you find yourself like after you finish putting down the first self-help book, the next thing you just pick up the next one,
like right
without
away,
doing anything. That's the problem.
Take a day reprieve at least. Go apply.
That's the thing. Self-help book, apply it. Try to apply it. Try and do anything from the book. And then move on.
Okay. You got more nuances that went on there. Okay.
I got more. I wanted to take that more complicated idea and sum it down to don't read more than two self-help books in a row.
If the self-help book is good, you will stop and take a pause.
And you'll do the thing. And then, eventually, you can pick up another one. Mm-hmm. But finish the first one first. It's like finishing your vegetables. Like, don't move on to cake. Finish your vegetables. Do the book. Reading the self-help book is half the problem. Like, that's half the solution. You read it and apply it.
Asterisk means there's self-help broad genre.
Yeah,
broad,
yeah, very broad. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's not fun. Okay, next. What was that, number five?
I don't know.
All right, probably. Number six, we think.
This one, you'll probably agree with me on this one.
Okay.
It is harder to make a good TV show than a good book.
Say that once more. So it's harder?
It's harder to make a good TV show than it is to make a good book.
Oh, good hot take, because I don't know. Oh.
Yeah.
Talk it out, then I'll agree or disagree as you expand.
I think that projects get increasingly, projects of quality get increasingly harder when more people, when more cooks are in the kitchen.
When it comes okay.
So when it comes to manufacturing and other things like that, more people, specialization actually does benefit you. I think for most creative endeavors, that is it is a constant battle to take home some type of artistic identity. And the more people you add into that equation, the harder it gets to actually get something of quality, because everyone has their own idea where you where at least a book, it's one person's vision, one person's ideal, it's a little easier to actually make it coherent and good.
Wow. That's a good hot take, because it's either you think TV shows are easier to make or books. That's it.
Yeah.
It's one or the other. Do you think, but being reliant on one person, that one person has to be good at what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's easier for one person to get their shit together and make a good book. Maybe it takes them a couple tries, but like,
this comes from your slogan, doesn't it? This comes from your slogan.
What's my slogan?
Democracy.
Yeah, that's true. Democracy is cringe. And most TV shows are made pseudo-democracies, faux-democracies.
You have a director.
You have a director, but then you also have writers. And then no matter how much the director adds notes, it doesn't always get the full direction. Like, the writers still have their own input. And even the writers' teams disagree and squabble. And they ultimately, it's not one writer coming up with all of it. It's a team of writers then bringing that to the show production. How many different people had their hands in the cookie jar? It's hard.
A couple of exceptions or other things that bring up Discovery by J.J. Mitten, three authors. We have This Is How You Lose a Time War was two authors. You have also, when a book's written, you have a ton of editors and beta readers and stuff, but
difference between three and however many hundreds of people involved to make a good TV show. Because that you don't even have to just get good writing. Yeah. You also have to have a good direction. You have to have good actors. You have to, all of these things, like, you can't have a weak link. You can have really good writers, but the actors suck.
So more chances of a weak link.
Yes.
Okay. I'm starting to follow a little bit.
If the author's good, guess what? The book's going to be good. If the director of a TV show is good, that's not a guarantee that the TV show's going to be good. If the actors are good, that's not a guarantee the TV show's going to be good. Like, they all have to be either passable or good for the show to actually be successful. That's way harder.
So if the director is bad, the whole thing's going to probably be bad. Whereas is that
maybe
the case? Or I guess, because if the author is bad, book bad, right?
Yeah.
But if the director is bad, can other people lift up someone's bad?
Probably. You know what I mean?
Because maybe that's an advantage of TV shows. If a lot are slacking, you at least have some people that are able to compensate and go, no, that don't do that. yeah, I don't know. I have no take on what your take. That is, it could go either way. It was such a good take
this nuance and boil it down. What's harder? What's harder to make? TV shows or a book?
As someone writing a book, I would say books are pretty hard. But I would say it's way easier. An established author who's written a book already, 10 times easier to write another book than it is to make a TV show, because you already know you're good at the thing.
Well, think about it. You right now.
Yeah.
Could you make a TV show?
If I had a studio?
If you had a studio, had the money, had the other people involved, if you had cameramen, like, the answer is no. You, Austin, but cannot make a TV show. You can write a book.
Hold on now, because if I would, like, give me a job in the TV studio, and I could definitely do it. You know, give me a writer. But
ultimately, you don't have, like, great, you're the writer.
Mm-hmm.
Will you determine if the show's good or not? No. It's not up to you. The amount of people put into this project make it so that quality is harder to accomplish.
But point being, if you're not a writer yet, like if you have no published book and you don't know if you're good at the writing book thing. So for average pop, you take somebody who's not an author, throw them into the team of 100 people, you're going to be lifted up by those under 99. Versus if you take a Joe Abercrombie, throw him in a TV, it'll be harder just because he's good at writing books.
Committee, like decisions by committee, ultimately encourage mediocrity. That a team large enough will carry the water for a bunch of slackers, but it's not like a team will elevate beyond a certain level.
Yes and no. Again, Discovery was three authors. It depends, because this podcast works, for example. We have two people who, we have a similar vision and cooperation. We know how each other work, and it creates somewhat above mediocrity, hopefully. There you go. It's just, that's one of the most subjective And, you know, I'm going to agree with you on Tuesday and disagree Wednesday. It just, it depends. That's a big, I hate saying it depends. Oh, skews me out.
There are good teams, there are bad teams, but
yeah,
I find team dynamics harder. Like that's the wonderful thing is when you actually have a good team, and that takes a lot of effort, takes a lot of, you know, a great deal of selection, a great deal of like time to be able to communicate properly and develop positive relationships. That is incredibly valuable. Like a group of people with similar vision, all with same energy, drive. Yeah, they can conquer the world. That's harder than one person, like really putting the nose of the grindstone, figuring out and making something.
They both have their such unique problems, each of them, of, you know, it's probably easier for you to, is it easier for you to be self-accountable and like do gym or have a trainer and do have other people who you're accountable by that have
now,
to
that's
treat
an
you.
Interesting point.
Well, think about these on this podcast. You're not doing this alone. I'm not doing this alone.
Yeah.
There's no way we're doing this podcast because, well, one, I'm not talking to the wall as much as you talk to the wall. I'm not. But it's, you are correct. The decision by a committee, lots of issues, but being the sole arbiter as well has its own issues. If you're a bad monarch, you're a bad monarch. It's that whole thing of if you get, like I mentioned with Abercrombie, of course it's going to be easier for him to write a book than get TV together. He's a proven good author.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I mean is if you're a nobody, it's like you asked me, if I was to do TV stuff right now versus book, TV would just be easier because put me in the writing room with five other writers. I don't even have to do anything if I've got other people that are compensating, you know? That's all I mean is the, it's that whole, if you look at a company of 100 people, only 20 of them are actually making that company function. Most people are just the desk job or not, I don't mean that, not that I've been in these jobs where I know I was not a valuable hire. I was there clicking the buttons going, man, AI is coming. That was me. I like, this was a good hot take piece. This, let us know if you agree or disagree on this one. TVs or books. That's interesting.
I kind of see it as it's just a pure numbers game of more stuff has to go right. And there's too many variables for failure with a TV show. Of it's the goal being like if one person was to cut their job was to cut down a forest of one tree and then you have another team of people of 100 people and their goal is to cut down a forest of 100, they had to get them all. Who's more likely to succeed? Like one person failure can significantly change everything. I don't know. There's more points of failure. That's all I'm saying.
And vice versa, more points of success. If individual sucks, more to help. You ever be a part of group project? You know.
Yeah, I know.
You hate those, don't you?
I do. I've been on both sides of it, where I carried and then was carried. So, yeah.
Yes. Good hot take.
I feel bad in both situations. Neither's good.
No, the point is, be elusive, be alone, and then you'll be okay.
Oh, God. But yeah, that's my hot take. I'm wondering if people agree with me on that one.
What number was that?
Let's see. I have 1, 2, 3... 4 left.
So that was 6. All right, let's hear next one.
All right. This one I know you'll disagree with.
Really?
This one, a little easy one.
Okay.
I don't think the farm boy trope is overused at all.
Disagree.
I love it. Disagree. Give me more. I don't have enough farm boys. I need all the farm boys. I love it. It's a great trope.
Fair enough.
It's the quintessential coming of age story.
Don't give me a genre I like. Don't give me a story beat I love.
What other reason is there to have the farm boy trope other than, hey, look, this person's going to come of age and going to develop into the young adult that they are.
Now, by farm boy, do you mean literally on a farm or more so the trope of humble beginnings?
Either one. I'll be honest. I'll take the more extreme. I want more actual farm boys. That's what I want. Take that clip out of context, YouTube. But no, like, I love the farm boy trope. It's great.
I personally like a mine boy.
A mind boy? Oh, a mine.
Mine.
Yes.
Personally.
That's Red just, Rising, yes.
Yes, yes.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. Just to clarify, not a minor.
not a minor.
It's Jesus. someone who mines and they're a child. Shit. That's what I want. So, yeah, you
I want the children to do manual labor.
That's all I want.
That's all I need. This country went downhill when we outlawed child labor.
If there's not a shop and they're not sweating. So, okay, you like your farm boys. Yeah. I see it.
It's great. It's so simple, but it saves so much time. You understand?
Like, you know exactly what you're getting.
You know exactly what you're getting. It's a great place to start of like discovering the world. Like, I don't know this place. And guess what? I'm going to find out. Because our farm boy doesn't know either. And so I'm going to discover it with him. And, oh, I already understand the innocence that comes from this young farm boy. Of like, he's not experienced the wider world. He has lived a sheltered but hard working life, so he's got some positive qualities himself. He's not a louse. He actually knows how to work with his hands. It's admirable. So like, he's got some positive qualities. He's got his wide-eyed fancies of the world. He dreams of something greater, and then we get to see his dreams either be crushed or, you know, fulfilled. It's wonderful. We need more of them.
That's so cute, isn't it? Just take that boy and bring him through hell. Drag him. The chain of dogs. So, okay.
It's not overused. We need more of it.
Yep. I disagree. All right. What's your number seven?
Number seven.
Yes. Or was this, did I get that wrong? Was this number?
Probably.
Okay.
Next one is, I don't understand how people can listen to music and read at the same time. I don't get it. It sounds weird. I'm honestly half convinced you guys aren't actually reading. How do you do it?
Oh,
I don't understand.
One counterpoint. Didn't you listen to music while reading Mushroom Blues?
No.
You didn't?
No.
Oh, really?
No.
Oh.
Like, there were music sections in the book, but those were like the in-between chapter things.
Did you audiobook it?
Yeah.
Oh, there. So
it had melody sections and their songs were there.
Shout out Adrian Gibson.
It was cool. I liked that.
No, he created a playlist for it where if you were physically reading.
Yeah, I tried.
You go to, oh, you just didn't
I
like it.
I pulled it up. Yeah. And yeah, too distracting. I can't do that. How do you guys do that? That doesn't make sense to me.
I can't attest. I've done it once and it was Mushroom Blues. And I stopped after a couple chapters.
You know,
with the music.
There we go. Yeah. You didn't dislike the book. You just were listening to music.
I stopped the music.
Oh,
I tried the music for like 2-3 chapters. I was like, I can't do it.
Yeah. And there you go.
Yeah.
It's too hard. I don't get it. The most I'll do is like play like a soundtrack of Rain, you know?
Okay, an ambiance.
Ambiance, like, but even then, there's some ambiance music too distracting. I like tiny, tiny background sounds.
Okay.
But actual music with melody, no.
Walk through the forest.
Yeah, already off to a bad start. No words. Words.
Oh.
Like, people listening to songs with actual words and a melody at the same time as reading, monsters. Like, you guys are superhumans.
I haven't done it yet, so I can't attest to other than my one experience, but I see what you mean.
Yeah, I don't get you guys, and that's my hot take. I don't get it. All right, here's another one.
Okay.
I think this is a spicy one.
Oh.
Most people don't know how to talk about books.
I like this hot take, because I would look... Do I want to be pretentious with you? Most people.
I'm set up a scenario for you.
Set one up.
And this is lived experience.
Oh, I can't do that, yeah.
The most valuable of experiences.
Uh-huh.
It's the only thing that's worthwhile. So, every friend besides you that we that I
agree. I agree. You convinced me.
This applies 100% of the time.
Yeah, you convinced me. It's like pulling teeth.
Yes. No, it's inevitable. Like, you try and get your friend to read a book, and you're like, hey, guy or gal, read this awesome book that I love. I'd love to talk about it with you. You give it to them. And let's say, miracle of miracles, they actually do read it. Instead of ignoring you and, like, feeling burdened by, like, why'd you give me a 1,000-page book?
Yeah, rough.
Miracle. They actually do read it. And miracle upon miracle, they like it. Oh, hallelujah. And then, you know, I'm loving it. We're going to set out a wonderful day. We're going to go out to this cafe that's really lovely. And we're going to enjoy talking about this book over brunch. Let's set the scene. And you sit down and you say, well, what'd you think of the book? And they go, I liked it. Well, what'd you like about it? I don't know. The characters were, I liked the main character. What about the main character did you like? Well, they were pretty fun. The action was pretty fun. Cool. I mean, it was cool. What'd you think about the themes? What'd you think the book was trying to say? I don't know. Good conquers all. Every fucking time. All of them. Maybe every single thing. Most people don't know how to talk about books.
Does that say something about our friend group?
It could. It really could.
See, that's why we have a podcast, by the way. We only have each other for talking about books.
I just want to go just further down than skin deep. Just, what'd you think about the character? What'd they do that was interesting? Do you have a favorite scene? Why? I don't know. It makes it not fun to talk about books with a lot of people.
Well,
yeah, that's my hot take.
It's come from personal frustration, I can tell.
Yeah.
Oh, is this your personal story, or were you dead?
Oh, was this? Oh, yeah, completely fictional. Never. This is purely hypothetical.
Thing is, you've gotten a lot of our friends to read too.
I know.
A lot of them.
I know. I stopped doing brunches. I've already. Yeah.
You end up talking about football instead.
Oh, yeah. That's another thing. No, I try and get my friends to read at this point just because it brings me joy, and I hope they experience the joy of it. I am not expecting a conversation. I don't do it for that reason. I'm not getting my friends to read for conversation's sake. I just hope they enjoy the thing like I did. That's it. That I've lowered my expectations, and I am slightly happier for it. Yeah, not greatly, just slightly.
I empathize with your plight.
Yeah.
I empathize. Good take. Was that number 9?
Yeah. Last one.
You have your last hot take. All right.
Yep.
Make All right. it good. What is it?
My last hot take. Probably should have saved that one for last.
Yeah.
Many people rate books poorly, not due to the book's quality, but due to their how jaded they have become after reading too much in said genre.
I could see that. I could see that happening. So if you're genred out.
Yeah.
Okay.
You've read all those tropes before. You've read the story beats. You've seen it all before. And because you've read hundreds of books of the same type of book, again,
the farm boy,
but call back to previous hot take of if you find yourself only picking up one type of book,
it masturbates the problem.
Exacerbates. There we go. Jesus Christ.
But it makes it worse.
It makes it worse.
Got it.
Yeah, I should stop trying to use words I know in my head that tongue don't say no good.
It's easier to say make bad.
Yes.
From prior stuff. Because you're looking at somebody who has... Is there any personal experience with this as well? Like, have you been jaded?
Oh, by, me. So, yeah, me. Like, what's an example? That's something I have to overcome, and right. I've tried. I did it with Stormlight.
We did. When?
Well, I just noticed the difference of, like, when I read book one, and then when I read, like, book three. Really? You know what I mean? Or book three, book four.
Your favorite.
Sorry. Question here of, like, read book one, read book two, read book three, and I'm going, like, I just start becoming jaded on as I go along of I've seen this before. I come back to it and I go, oh, I've seen, like, on a reread. I'll be like, oh, I've seen these things before. And my opinion goes down. Like, is...
I feel like the more on reread. No?
Some I like.
Some more. You did? Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
But overall as a whole, like, I'm looking through different series of... Like, I would say a big reason I enjoy The Wheel of Time is because I wasn't jaded. It's a big reason why I really enjoyed it. I was able to get invested into it. And then by the time I'm like now on a reread, I'm connected. I'm connected to the world and characters. Even though I have read other things, I see the references. I get it.
A Game of Thrones? Were you jaded?
Yeah. It definitely is. Part of it. And that's a problem with me.
Mm-hmm.
I have to think about when I read something like Of Blood and Fire.
I was definitely jaded. 100%.
I think a large part of it's me. I've seen this type of story way too often, and I'm not giving it probably the good grace that the average reader would. And they don't read as much as I do, and they don't take, like, they're not just so intense and, like, anal retentive about this stuff, and they're not, like, they're just picking up a fun book to read, and they'll enjoy it. And so I have to think about that myself of when I rate things. Is it really disappointing, or am I just disappointed because it's not new and novel?
The ever changing art in art history of we start to go from one set of impressionism, surrealism, we're in modern art right now of it's different, it's new. Haven't seen it before. Cool. What is that? And then that gets old. New thing spawns.
Yeah.
Are you getting sick of that genre or that story type, I guess? Because, well, right now you're taking a month where you're going to read less fantasy sci-fi. You're going to start to read a bit of nonfiction. But you're like, hey, I want to expand. I want something different.
Yeah. I want a breather. I don't want to be jaded.
Yep.
And so I honestly
want to be fresh.
Even just the fact that we do fantasy and sci-fi. I know they're often placed together. Mm-hmm. Completely get it. They're not all that different, in all honesty. Both fictional worlds of the fantastic in some form or fashion. But even that is very helpful. If we were only a fantasy book channel, it would be harder.
Yeah.
I appreciate greatly that we can hop between genres, even between those two, and try and branch out a little bit further. You
know? Branch from
banging
one.
On the walls. Like, let us out. I want to try new things. Yeah.
Yeah, you're not wrong. We speculative fiction of we've done Lonesome Dove on here, a couple of historical fiction stuff, stayed in those lines. We're doing some nonfiction we'll be reviewing on here too.
Yep.
So it's going to expand a little bit, but yeah, that is, I agree. That could definitely be a reason you feel worse about a book.
Yeah. I've just read also reviews and, like, seeing it gone, they've just read too many. Mm-hmm. It's a you problem rather than a book problem.
When is it a book problem? How can you tell if it's a book problem? Because there's books I'm certain I don't like, and it's a book's problem. But also that book, it's a book problem because it's a book problem subjectively to you. You're going, I don't like this. Maybe it is just because you've seen it before type of thing. But how do you determine it's a problem with me versus a problem with the book?
Figuring out what the target audience for the book is, I think is very important.
Okay.
So think about YA novels. A big advantage that they have is, like, if you are targeting a younger audience, assumedly, God, I cannot talk today.
The word is masturbate.
Thank you. You're assuming that the younger audience is not read as much as an adult audience. Yeah. And so you can use tropes with kind of fresh eyes versus an adult will read that same YA book after after reading a bunch of other stuff. Jesus. This is why we stop doing two videos in a row. Anyway.
Yeah.
So you can use the same trope and know that it's fresh for them.
Yes.
Versus an adult was like, I've seen this before. And so do you not like the trope? Do you not like its implementation? What do you not like about its implementation? Are you finding yourself saying, like, I don't like how it's implemented because it's so obvious? If you're fine, like, saying, like, oh, it's too obvious, that's something to question. Is it obvious only to you, or is it obvious because it was structured probably poorly? But that's if you find yourself asking yourself, like, telling yourself that, of, oh, this book is just really too on the nose, too obvious, that could be an indication that you're the problem, not the book.
Got it. That's your 10th hot take.
That's my 10th hot take.
Wow. Rich, I'm disappointed. Some of those were soft. Some of those were pretty soft. Wow. How many
people...
Do
you understand how it was hard for me? I'm going like, these are correct. I don't know what rabble think. How am I... Why are lions supposed to listen to the opinions of sheep?
Game of Thrones right there. Now, I think I disagree with half or something. Let us know how many you disagreed or agreed with. What do you think? They obviously should agree with all 10 of yours.
Oh, of course. If they've learned anything. And just letting you know, if you agreed with all 10, buy a Democracy is Cringe t-shirt from our fourth wall, whatever store.
TudorRamble.com. If you happen to disagree with at least 5, you get Teeter Your Totter.
There you go.
That's how it works.
That's how you know. That's how I'll know in a monetary fashion that you agree with me.
If you all like this video, we can do more styles where Rich and I just give our personal opinions, not hot takes, but different things.
Then we turn into an actual podcast. Just yapping about our feelings on things.
What could be a random topic they'd want to hear?
Let us know down below.
Thanks for watching.
Bye, all.
Bye-bye.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion. Or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Families agents. Life's better when you're under American Families roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.